B-52's founding member Kate Pearson has been having a very busy 2015. Earlier this year, she released her very first solo album, Guitars and Microphones, produced by Tim Anderson. The record features writing from Chandelier singer Sia, who also served as its executive producer, and guitar work from The Strokes' Nick Valensi. If that wasn't enough excitement, earlier this month, Kate married her longtime partner, Monica Coleman, in Hawaii. So congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
Monica's here too.
She's also been touring with a new album and will be doing a benefit for the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild Ceramics Expansion Project. And that is next Friday night. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Kate Pearson and Monica Coleman to the roundtable. Thank you very, very much for being with us. What a great pleasure.
Thank you,
Joe. Hey, Joe. So thrilled to be here because, you know, you are constantly on our radio. We listen to the have that radio, your station on all day. So we hear your voice, hear all your interviews, and I love Alan, too.
Well, yes.
And everyone. But,
well,
you know.
Thank you. it's really very, very sweet and nice to have you here, especially because Monica and I were you had expressed interest and said you'd come on, and we were thrilled about that, and then Monica and I were writing back and forth. I didn't realize in the middle of this you guys were getting married, so... like not only but I was like, gee, you know, it's been a couple of days since I heard from them, and then I find out, oh yeah, you're getting married. So that's very cool. Congratulations.
Thank you. We didn't announce it really. We just thought we'd go to Hawaii by ourselves and just, you know, kind of have a romantic kind of getaway, and then we didn't know when with this busy schedule, B-52 shows, my solo shows, and all the stuff that's happening, when we're going to go to Hawaii. But magically, with some sort of harmonic convergence, the B-52's got a private gig on August 4th. Sia was already there, going to be there at the same time. And the band was flying in on August 2nd. So we had to have it on the 3rd. And the band was all there. And my friends came in from Kauai. And so there were like just 15 of us, including us. And the whole B-52's family was there, so it got to be a very nice, small Hawaiian wedding.
It was beautiful. We had the Lim family, who are a very famous Hawaiian family band, and they came and sang for us. They were incredible.
Yeah, that really made the wedding.
Oh, yeah.
They're just amazing.
Well, you guys tweeted pictures, and it looked beautiful, and you guys looked beautiful.
Thanks,
Joe. Yeah, just say, like, you can't imagine a more magical time.
It was
lovely.
Amazing with the music and the setting, and a Native Hawaiian officiant did a beautiful ceremony incorporating a lot of Native Hawaiian kind of rituals. It's funny though, because we didn't, as I said, we didn't announce it. I just put some pictures on Facebook, and then it was like trending the next day, and it went all over People Magazine and everywhere. It was just, you know.
Well, sure.
So it just became a thing. I didn't even know. We woke up and it's like, whoa, what's happening, you know?
And it must have been nice to have the band there.
It was amazing because they're, as I told you before, my friends who the band Betty who have been very key. Actually, they're how we met Sia at a Betty birthday party, and everyone's required to sing at any Betty event. And one of the Betty girls just got married, Amy, and we all had to sing, and you know, it was just a show. When they had a birthday party, Sia sang, and we didn't know who she was. And she got up and sang. I sang, and I thought, wow, this woman has a great voice. And then, you know, it was Sia. So we met her as mutual friends, not really as musicians in a way. You know, we just became friends on the basis of just kind of talking around the table. And then it was Monica who really said to Sia, can you help Kate get her lifelong dream of, you know, doing her solo record? Can you help her get this done already? Because I kept saying to Monica, I've got to do this. I've got to finally do this, after years of attempting it, to get it out, of writing songs, but never really getting an album out there. So we just went to LA with our dogs, and we started doing writing sessions. So that was how my solo album came to be.
It's Guitars and Microphones. There's 10 tracks on this, and as I mentioned in the introduction, so Sia executive produced it.
Yes.
And wrote, co-wrote many of the songs on it.
She wrote three songs before we even started the writing sessions. She wrote three songs for me for this album, and she was writing for herself at the time, and she called and said, I've written a song, you know, for you. I didn't even realize it. And she wrote this wonderful song called The Matrix, and another one called Bring Your Arms. The first one was Bring Your Arms, based on a turtle rescue that Monica and C and I witnessed when we went on a vacation together in Tulum, Mexico.
Yeah.
And so she wrote that song about that, and then several others, one called Crush Me With Your Love, which she sang at our wedding, and that was a title Monica thought of. So then we started the writing session. So she co-wrote all the other songs on the album except for Wolves, which I wrote with Chris Braid.
Tell us, I'd like the audience to get an idea of the album. I think we have Bring Your Arms, right, Rob? We have that. So let's hear a little of Bring Your Arms. Bring Your Arms from Kate Pearson's solo album, Guitars and Microphones, which is just out this year. And I know you've been going out doing a lot of touring. And we'll talk about your Birdcliff gig, but also you're going to be doing the Hoot this weekend, too.
Yes, the Summer Hoot. Mike and Ruthie, the Mike and Ruthie band, has been my backing band. And they've also been opening for me on solo shows. And I've known them for a long time. I know Ruthie's, her dad, Jay Unger,
yeah.
And her stepmother, Molly Mason, and
yeah.
Her mom, who's a luthier, has fixed my guitars. So I know the whole family. And they're doing this wonderful hoot this weekend. And I'm going to be narrating Peter and the Wolf on Sunday morning. And if you go to homeofthehoot.com, there are going to be 25 bands over 3 days. Loudon Wainwright III is going to be on Sunday. And the Peter and the Wolf, as I narrate, it's going to have kazoos, mandolin, pedal steel, fiddle, of course, with Jay Unger. Molly Mason playing bass as the grandfather sound.
Yeah.
It's going to be really a fun thing to see.
Do you
hear.
Do a wolf voice?
The wolf voice?
Do you do a wolf voice in this?
No. Really, okay, the wolf doesn't speak. The wolf is just... The wolf...
Just gobbling, yeah.
There's the duck, and there's the cat speaks, and the duck speaks. I can't remember the lines of the bird,
yes.
The bird, but I do a little bit of a voice. I sort of based it on this David Bowie rendition, which is pretty subtle. He doesn't try to do, cartoony, like, and the bird said, and then the wolf and the grandfather. So I'm, trying to do it a little bit more, low key.
And
but I get very excited when the wolf and the bird and their duck are all,
Well, that just sounds great.
It's going to be
fun. That's a lot of fun. All right. When you, just in listening to that, my God, you sound great. I mean, do you feel that your voice has aged at all?
No, I don't. Actually, people say, wow, you sound like you, when I sing that. Oh, that's the voice of, Rome. Or I think because I do a lot of vocal exercises,
yeah.
And I warm up, and I've just tried very hard to keep my voice. I had a vocal teacher, was quite a few years ago, that I worked with her, and sadly she passed away. She had ALS, but she really taught me not about how to sing or, what to sing or style. It was about how to sing while supporting your voice and preserving your voice. Like a baby can scream all at once, and it never gets hoarse, right? A baby's never
sure.
Like, oh, I can't scream anymore. It's like, because it's naturally using its, from the diaphragm, So I think that's one important thing. And also, we have the B-52s, we have little in-ear monitors. So we have our own little mix, so we're not having to really sing. You know, we sing loud as we can. You know, we sing lava like our life depends on it, but we're not having to scream or try to strain over drums and bass and stuff because we have our in-ear monitors. That's really saved a lot of musicians' voices and hearing.
Yes, and hearing. Tell us a little bit about obviously the B-52s has meant a lot to you. You're still a part of that group. What do you think it is about the personalities there that have allowed you to have the longevity, not to mention the music, which has brought the audience for so many years along?
I got ahead of myself before when I was talking about Amy from Betty saying in her wedding, when you marry me, you marry a band, because that's true. I had to say it to Monica too, because the band is like a family. We have a very family dynamic. We've been together for 38 years, and you know, we've taken a lot of breaks, and we've had the death of Ricky Wilson in 1985 from AIDS, which seemed like the end of the band, and we came back a few years later with our most successful album, Cosmic Thing, which was largely based on sort of getting together after Ricky died and realizing what we had in each other, you know, this musical family, that we were able to make this music together and also conjure a lot of the memories of Ricky. A lot of the songs on Cosmic Thing sort of conjure that time when we started in Athens, Georgia in 1977.
How much of it is a Southern sound?
I think that we were in Athens is a very important aspect of the band, because there was nothing to do in Athens. People think of Athens, Georgia as, whoa, it's, you know, music central, which it is now.
Right.
But when we started, there was a feed store, there was Farmer's Hardware. I had moved down there to do a Back to the Land thing, and I had a little shack. It really was like the Love Shack, a funky little shack in the middle of a field, no running water, and an outhouse with a view. And I rode my bicycle into town, and then I met the rest of the band, and we hung out and crashed parties together, and it was a larger group of friends. And one day we just started jamming after having a Flaming Volcano drink. We couldn't afford the food, so we got a drink at this Chinese restaurant, and we started jamming, and the band just started kind of by spontaneous combustion. We never said, hey, let's start a band, you play keyboard, you know, it just started by this jamming, and we jammed on ever since. And that's how we write collectively, by jamming and kind of channeling the collective unconscious and sort of letting the song structures be more free. We started out writing songs that were kind of based on jams with not necessarily a very structured, you know, verse, chorus, or pre-chorus, bridge kind of structure. Some of them were linear with the chorus at the end. You know, so it became this very unique sound and very unique to Athens, because soon after we started, REM came along,
right,
and then Love Tractor and Pylon and lots of other groups. There's so many groups now, Neutral Milk Hotel, I mean, you name it, you know, there's so many bands in Athens. But we just started to have our own fun. There was nothing to do, no place to play, except a folk club.
Talk a little bit about the fun aspect, because, and this is extremely anecdotal, but I feel that it's true, which is when I bring up just that I'm going to be talking to you and from the B-52s, people automatically smile. When you bring it up, people smile. And that, I mean, to me, that's a great reaction.
Yeah.
Is because it's joy, it's fun, and I guess to me, the only downside of that is that maybe people then don't realize how much work goes into it. But other than that,
that's true. Yeah, people think it's all fun, and but it mostly is. I have to say, you know, and people say, well, don't you get tired of playing Rock Lobster? But that's one of those songs that is just fun. Still, it's unbelievable after all these years, because we improvise the fish sounds at the end, and it's just so danceable that, you know, you can't help but move on stage, even, you know, and watching people dance and watching their letting their inner, you know, freak out. I mean, people have, you know, just really, really go nuts when we play that song. Also, Love Shack, of course, and Rome. Everyone stands up when we do Rome.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are familiar with other Planet Claire and Private Idaho. But you know, when you start out writing and being in a band, you do it for your own fun. We didn't have a big plan. We never planned to be, you know, still going this long. You know, we never looked too far into the future. We just sort of rolled with what was happening. But, you know, I have to say that the legacy of people coming up and saying, not only was it fun, but you helped me through high school. You helped me realize that I wasn't alone, that it's okay to be different. So that was this side effect that, you know, wow, we didn't have to do anything more than start the band and have fun to have this effect on this great positive effect on people, which is just great to hear.
That idea of it's okay to be different is certainly present in the song Mr. Sister. Talk a little bit about the origin of that song, and then we'll hear a little bit of it.
That song was based on, you know, the B-52s, largely a gay band and gay sensibility and kind of sense of humor and Fred's great sense of humor and everyone collectively with our craziness melded together.
By the way, did he do the best man speech at your wedding? Is that true?
He did a toast. He
okay.
did. He,
All
he
right.
did it, it, yeah. yeah, he absolutely did.
That's
yeah.
great.
It was
great.
Things about the wedding became, you know, they morphed into, it was like Monica has a gray dress, then it was gold. My dress was, you know, pink, and then Fred was the best man speech, and then it was the best man, and then at the very end, in a French magazine, it said Kay Pearson and his bride. So
great.
Good segue to Mr. Sister.
Yeah.
So speaking of that, so Mr. Sister is based on my friend Tangel and I always, and he was a drag queen that former drag queen, not anymore, but he was at Wigstock a lot. And with Lady Bunny started Wigstock, and it was just a gay jamboree and all these singers. And anyway, it was just, we used to call each other Mr. Sister. And it was kind of like old school gay talk, you know. And just, I guess, you know, thinking of him as a gay boy growing up. And one time when he moved back and got sober and moved back to Texas, and he moved back with his family, and I called him and I asked, his mother answered the phone, and I said, is Tange there? You know, can I speak to her? And she said, my boy is not a woman. So, you know, I just think about the problems of growing up being a gay boy in the South and anywhere. And it's just about transformation. It could be a girl. It could be anyone who feels betrayed by the mirror. I don't think any woman is satisfied when she looks in the mirror either. Not many, except maybe Beyonce. But, you know, I just think it's an ode to sort of the power of transformation and learning to love yourself. And I know it was picked up sort of wrongly labeled a transgender anthem, which I wanted to include, of course, anyone.
Sure.
Transgender, anyone in the gender spectrum. I didn't mean it to be sort of me writing a transgender anthem. You know,
and that became a little bit of a kerfuffle, but it was it's interesting then just of how things are dissected.
I guess. And it was interesting because Monica then contacted one of the most sort of strident, outspoken.
I was Fallon Fox, who is a transgender female martial artist. It was sort of an attack online, and Kate and I were like, oh my God, you know, we live up on top of the mountain, we're sort of secluded in Woodstock. We didn't realize that this whole movement was happening with trans rights and the whole change in sort of terminology and all of that. And I think a lot of the misconception was based on our own ignorance about what was actually happening in that community. But we reached out. We said, you know, look, this is something that we, you know, we never ever meant to offend anyone, or you know, we started a dialogue, and I think it created a very good awareness for a lot of people who were reading our conversations online and things like that. It just brought an awareness that to us, we got an education, and I think to a lot of people who are maybe Kate's fans that had no idea about this issue, got an education. So it brought awareness, which is great. We're happy about that.
There's a great video with Fred Armisen as well.
I'm
hoping to let's listen to a little of the song that is on Guitars and Microphones. This is Mr. Sister. A little bit of Mr. Sister from Kate Pearson's new album, which is guitars and microphone. And I assume you'll be performing that at the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild event a week from tonight.
Yes, August 28th, Friday at the Birdcliff Barn.
So what I understand about this is that the money goes to their ceramics program, and you are the ceramicist.
I am. I actually started at the Birdcliff Guild taking pottery classes with Rich Conti, who's a master potter. He's been head of the program there for 20 years. He's an amazing teacher. I excelled really quickly because he's so great. And I got into it. I went crazy. Our house is covered with pots. I put a kiln in. It's insane. My sister comes. I'm like, take some pottery. And she leaves with three boxes. So it can be a little bit of an addiction, but it's an amazing thing to be doing. And the barn itself, when it would rain, water would come down on the basement, where we're doing our pottery. So right. It's great to be able to help fix that up and expand the program.
Let's bring in Jeremy Adams. He is the executive director of the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild. And Jeremy, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for inviting me today.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Tell us a little bit about how this is going to, what the idea is with the expansion project.
Oh, sure. We're the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild. We see ourselves as a vibrant center for, excellence in the arts and crafts, set here in the beautiful rural community of Woodstock. Our desire here is to expand this program. We're 113 years old as an organization. We were born out of a reaction to the Industrial Revolution. Today, there's a reaction, we believe, to the Technological Revolution. And people are looking towards a return to making things and sort of that kind of visual act. And there's something that we believe is nothing almost more visual than ceramics itself. So this opportunity is going to allow us to grow our facilities and grow our programming, specifically starting and focusing on the ceramics. And this is the first step in what we see as hopefully an ambitious plan to help Birdcliff grow into a premier site for the exploration and creation of arts and crafts.
The Woodstock, the whole story of the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild is fascinating because it has such a great ingrained history in the town and actually even in the state of New York.
Sure. It was born out of a shared dream between two of the founders, Ralph Radcliffe Whitehead and Jane Bird McCall. They wanted to create a utopian art colony, supporting the arts and crafts movement, as I said, born as a response to the Industrial Revolution. Brought a lot of artists to the Woodstock community. We like to say that, it all started here as making Woodstock as a colony for the arts, and of course it continues today.
And I think Woodstock should be more famous for that, because when I go on tour, I'm so tired of saying the
festival
Woodstock
is not here,
but Woodstock's the most amazing arts colony. The famous artists that lived in Woodstock, including Bob Dylan and all the musicians before that, there were all these great artists that were here, and I think the house, White Pines, which is an amazing structure. I think it should be restored because this was I'm looking at the names here. I'm sorry. I get mixed up between Ralph Radcliffe Whitehead, and there was also Hervey White, who was also one of the founders, who was more of the sort of hippie element of it that started the Maverick concerts. But that house, White Pines, should be restored. I should be like the Jackie Kennedy, and
absolutely.
I'll give a tour and say,
it's beautiful. It's incredibly beautiful. And it's so amazing, too. I mean, that in a way, culturally, we're going back to that sort of homemade, making things yourself. I mean, Kate and I can and put pickles up and all that stuff. But I think like the whole Brooklyn movement and all of that. I don't know what it's. I guess it's called the hipster movement. Is sort of back towards handmade items. People are doing that. The Etsy and all of that.
Sure.
And it's sort of like that sensibility is coming back around. It's like it's groovy now.
Well, the event. Go ahead.
So I think especially. In the Hudson Valley area, I think more and more artists are moving up here for just that kind of experience.
Totally.
We're getting disillusioned with living in the city where it's just so unaffordable. here we have time and space and this great community that are just doing really, really interesting things.
Jeremy Adams is Executive Director of the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild. Jeremy, thank you very much for jumping in the conversation and talking about, and best of luck next Friday. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Great pleasure. You can find out more information by going to woodstockguild.org, woodstockguild.org. Kate Pearson's benefit concert for the Woodstock Birdcliff Guild Ceramics Expansion Project is next Friday, August 28th at 7:30, from 7:30 to 10:30. There's also a meet and greet there, so you can find all that
out
online.
Yeah, all of that's online. We're looking for sponsors. If anybody out there would like to help sponsor, you can go to that website and click on Donate Now right through PayPal. We'd love to get some donors. You'll go on the website with a link, and you can help us out. If anybody out there is interested in helping, we're still looking for sponsors.
And there's still tickets available, and the Mike and Ruthie Band are going to do a short opening set, and they're going to be playing with me, so it's going to be a really great, vibrant, happy, fun set, and there's going to be wine there, and it's in this beautiful barn, and it's going to be under the stars, the little meet and greet beforehand, so, and then inside to the barn for some real
Sounds
fun
like
music.
Beautiful, beautiful evening.
Yeah.
Really special.
It's going to be really fun.
And then we're out of time, but I just also want to mention that you also don't forget Lazy Meadow.
Oh, yeah.
that old place.
Yeah. So this is your inn? Refer to it an inn, motel? What do you refer to it as?
Well, you know, it's interesting because they all have kitchens, and people come. We leave the key on the door out hanging out. So people come and pick up their key, and they come in, and they spend the weekend. We call it a lodging, Kate's Lazy Meadow. It's a lodging, so people just come have a great time. We have barbecue and picnic tables set up on the river, and there's a fire pit down there, and it's super low key, but the decor inside is
mid-century madness.
There we go.
And the website for that is
lazymeadow.com.
Lazymeadow.com.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. It's a neat, neat place.
It's great. And there's a link to Lazy Desert, which is our Airstream hotel in Landers, California, near Joshua Tree.
Which is also very, very cool. Kate Pearson's solo album, and yeah, don't forget, when you go, you're obviously going to hear this great music that we've been playing this morning. The album is amazing. It's Kate Pearson, guitars and microphones. The solo album is out. The Woodstock Birdcliff Guild Ceramics Expansion Project benefit is next Friday night at 7:30. Kate Pearson, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much. And
it's
thanks
really
for being
fun.
So sweet.
I
just love having you here. Monica, you're the best. Thank you so much making all this happen and for being with us as well.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Again, you can find out more at woodstockguild.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.